Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hello, everybody. So this week we are going to cover tooling development, tooling approvals, and with a particular focus on plastic injection molding. And today I'm joined by Andy Bartlett, who is a product designer with very rich experience across different types of electromechanical products, from mobile phones to toys and various other categories. And he is originally from the UK. He is these days in the UK. I actually get to know him in Hong Kong last year. And several of our clients had some pretty good experiences with him. So good industrial designer with a wealth of experience. And so this week, as I said, we're going to cover the topic of tooling. So, and again, with a focus on plastic injection molding, there's always a big risk, sort of a leap of faith when the prototypes look good. Maybe maybe the enclosure, maybe also some of the internal mechanical parts that are in plastic have been 3D printed, or maybe they've been CNC machined out of a block of plastic. And people say, yeah, okay, it's fine. It's ready to go into production. It's ready to go into tooling. But of course, how to go into tooling? What exactly does that mean? And what are the differences going to be? What kind of defects might appear, and so on and so forth? What kind of issues could come up? And so in this this episode, to make it maybe a little bit more light, maybe not fun, but maybe a little bit more light, we're gonna cover it from the angle of the most common pitfalls, most common mistakes to avoid. Hey, Andy, so how are you doing today?
Hey, Ryan. Yeah, great. Thank you for that lovely introduction. It's very, very kind words. Thank you.
Thanks. So let's jump into the topic, and maybe the first kind of common mistake would be going straight into the fabrication of the tooling from a 3D CAD drawing without doing a design for manufacturing, design for quality, design for cost, and so on. So sort of review, right? Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, just to to pick up on something you said just a moment ago. This is from a designer's perspective, the gateway between development and handing that design over to a manufacturing partner and a tool maker can be a very anxious time for you as the someone invested heavily emotionally and time and creativity. It's a very anxious time. And also a very busy time, you know. When you look at how if you charted the progress of your design over a period of time, the weeks or the days leading up to tool start are often when a lot of your it focuses the mind, and you make lots and lots of progress. So it's an exciting time, and also sometimes a rather anxious one. So. Yeah, to pick up on your point, it's very important that you are diligent and methodical and very careful in this stage. It's often overlooked because many of the qualities in your design that you're trying to you're trying to achieve in the end product happen at this stage, and many of the mistakes happen at this stage as well. So yeah, you've gone through your validation process and you think you're ready to go. As I say, you're handing the data over to a third party, the factory, and then perhaps via the factory to the tool maker. Mm-hmm. And it's a sense that there's a certain sense of loss of control over it now. You're giving it to somebody else, but there are some key things that you still need to be very much on top of. and very much engaged and proactive with your development partner, and design for manufacturers is one of them. And the things that you should be looking for. I mean, one of the things that I always do is before I approve a tool, the CAD for Toolstar, is a really simple thing, and it's an interference check. And most CAD software has this facility on, and it's basically just looking at where even very, very small interferences are happening. Because they can be signposts to areas that are perhaps being overlooked or forgotten about and need some attention. So that's possibly one of the first steps. But you do need to go very carefully through the whole design and check for very basic things, often like knife edges, very thin sections in plastic that are going to cause either aesthetic or feel problems. Radius, adding radiuses and drafts so that the product can be released, because I don't need to tell you this, ejection of a part, particularly in injection molding, getting the part out of the tool could cause damage, aesthetic damage to your product, or can cause processing constraints that the tool's not being run optimally. So they're definitely things, radiuses and drafts. And the other thing is, as it is from a design perspective, this is the other thing that really we should do. And it's a discipline, is to make sure that we understand where the cooling channels on the tooling are, to make sure that you're going to get the right surface finish. Maybe it's a gloss finish or a surface without defect. Mm-hmm. And where the part's going to be fed and the type of gates that are going to be used. Because again, it might be a detail that gets overlooked, that you might be feeding a part on a really important surface that you care about, and you don't want a scar or you don't want any of the defects that can bring. So it feels like a very technical thing, when you're being very close to design from a end user experience. But these details, these elements from tooling design, from design for manufacture, are really, really important and can really contribute significantly to the quality you're trying to deliver in the marketplace, several months down
definitely.
The line.
And just so people really grasp that, let's say there's a new product with, let's say the enclosure is in plastic, is going to be injection molded. When is the real golden sample ready? That's after tooling, right? Because that's when you see the flow lines, the gates, and so on. So just because you 3D print something and you say, I like it, doesn't mean production is going to look like that. And a lot of manufacturers in China don't mention that because, they want to go straight into making the tooling. And once the customer has paid the tooling, if they're a little bit unhappy, it's much easier to just say, okay, but let's go to mass production. You're in a hurry, right? You already paid the money anyway. Let's do it.
Yes, that's right. Yes. So you're right. So it's a fundamental step towards realizing the product. I was trying to think there. You don't often add drafts and all the production features onto something you're going to 3D print. You're normally looking at testing fit and function, and maybe and visual elements to the design. But no, you're right. It's the first time that you're going to be exposed. The weaknesses or the production design will be there for you to see, and that is in your T1 parts or your first off samples. Actually, on that note, if I may. I think design is an iterative process. So we try to be agile, we try to be quick, and we try to be efficient. But the tooling verification, or the verification of your tool and your tool trial, is an iterative process. And it may be that there's a strong drive for you to get to market very quickly. But in my experience, you will always have to have a tool modification process. I mean, you may or may not agree with this, but I've never worked on a project where the parts that came off the tool first time were right, that they're ready to go for mass production. There is always going to be a degree of of verification in your tooling cycle, and it's very natural to want to compress those cycles to get to market quicker, and often we can get into a lot of trouble when we try and eliminate those standard procedures. So for me, that's an important part of the design for manufacture, is the verification of the tool, and having space in the schedule, in your schedule, to accommodate that and to allow that to happen, as it is a natural and very important contribution towards a really fantastic product at the end that you can make in volume and reliably and on quality and specification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that common mistake is to look at the website of a potential supplier and they say, hey, 15 business days or whatever, you know, you can get the tooling, but that doesn't mean anything, because anyway, the first part, you're going to get back to them and say, hey, you need to change this a little bit, and this doesn't look so good or whatever. Yeah. Doesn't assemble nicely with the rest, and so on. Then they need to go back into making the changes and everything. So what is a relative, for a average complexity part, doesn't have very tight tolerance or anything special, would you say 6 weeks is relatively, you know, comfortable estimate of the time to get it right?
6 weeks is, I would say that's reasonable. Yeah, I would say so. Again, as you rightly were careful to qualify, it does depend on the on the complexity, and of course on your quality expectations, because they vary. You know, product to product will vary greatly. What one thing I wanted just to add to that, Renaud, is when I work with my clients from a design perspective, I always tell them when budgeting for the project that to take the cost of the tool and to add at least 10 to 15% of that cost, mm-hmm. and have that in their budget to prepare for the changes that they will inevitably want to make. I'm not talking about changes that are driven by a tooling error, or I'm sure that they happen rarely, but you will, as you say, on that journey and that iterative journey, you will change your mind as a client, you know, designing your product. You will go, wouldn't it be good if? And I think that it's always very prudent to have a budget or a pot in your budget to accommodate changes that you may not know that you want, but in my experience, very, very often happen.
Yes, and the harder the steel is, the more budget. So
correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So that brings us onto another kind of common mistake, is request quotations from suppliers, you know, either tooling fabrication specialists or plastic injection molding companies that will manage the fabrication of the tooling. And you just tell them, okay, here's the part, you know, here's the drawing, here's the material, texture, finishing, and give me a price. And then if you ask 10 of them, you would have prices ranging from X to 2X or 3X, right? And then you say, well, you know, this one is cheap and their English is good and okay. And they tell me that 3 weeks and you can be done, so let's do it. Mm-hmm. Often a serious mistake, right?
So yeah, for sure.
You might end up with tooling that can only take 10 or 20,000 shots. Mm. You might find out that they believe they own the intellectual property of the tooling.
Yeah.
So we've seen a lot of buyers, you know, they go on Alibaba or wherever, and they don't have experience developing new products.
Yeah.
And they don't make sure that the supplier signs the right kind of agreement. And then they basically, maybe they just have an NDA, or they have a contract that is not enforceable in China, that is maybe enforceable in St. Louis, Missouri, or whatever. And then at one point, things don't go very well. And they say, well, you know, it's my tooling. I'm going to put it out and give it to another supplier.
Yeah.
And oh, surprise, the tooling is held hostage.
Yes.
Basically, when you pull the tooling, I mean, it's a big FU kind of signal to the supplier. It means I'm leaving forever. You know, I don't want to hear about you anymore. No more business. Yeah. Now, if the supplier, let's say the normal cost of the tooling would be, I don't know, $5,000 or $10,000. Okay. But they made it half of the price. They subsidized it, right?
Yes.
But they made it just at cost, and then they were a little bit too optimistic, so they lost a little bit of money. But they think they really helped you a lot. You know, they think that their contribution was like genius, you know. So they're gonna say, well, you know, this tooling, okay, first the tooling design is mine. I'm not gonna give you the drawings of the tooling because I made it myself. I did not charge you for that. Mm-hmm. And number two, the tooling, well, I only invoiced you, you know, half of it. So it's, you know, I'm not going to give it to you like that. And of course, the customer gets really nuts because that's really shocking, right? These guys are holding my tooling hostage. What are they going to do with it? They're gonna make my product without me.
As you say, Bruno, it definitely is one of the biggest assets that you have as the inventor or the creator of the product. It's one of the biggest assets that you have, and can very easily be the whole ownership trail can be unconsidered, I think, if you're new to the process. Okay. So for me the place that you eliminate that confusion is when you raise the purchase order, and on that purchase order is your contract of ownership, where you very clearly state full ownership. And it's that point that you take away any ambiguity, so that you're not bitten later on down the line when you go to maybe take the tooling somewhere else, and those conversations start to raise their head. If you have it very clear right at the beginning, then that's obviously going to be very beneficial to you. The other thing that I would say, I personally would never go to. Efficient development process is a big part of it is building relationships with your development partners. And so to go on and onto Alibaba or to buy without using a trusted intermediate such as yourselves, or I wouldn't do it. It might seem attractive at the time, but it would just be too much of a risk
I would say it this way. If you're going to make a million pieces, you know, then you are attractive to the big guys, the big tool makers or plastic injection molding shops. And you can actually on, you know, Global Sources, Alibaba, you can filter, you know, through that, and you can see the ones that have the certifications, for example, for making automotive parts, that work with big companies, and then you can, of course, scratch a little bit below the surface to see if there's truth to that. You can see if they have good systems in place, a real business, engineers to do DFM and all these kind of things. Actually, for someone who has experience buying in China, that would not be a daunting process. And you can really find some really good ones. Now, what's more scary is when your volumes don't make it interesting for these big guys, which is most projects. And you try to work with, you know, two levels below that. And then, yes, anything can happen. Tooling is just really something a bit scary. Also, who's going to make the tooling? I mean, a lot of plastic parts suppliers will say, yeah, no problem, we make the tooling, we make the tooling. And maybe they have a couple of guys who are capable of making the tooling. But very often they will make a portion of the tooling in-house and
yes.
another portion of the tooling outside. And maybe
yes.
what they do in-house is the ones where they really want to have more control, maybe for their number one customer or whatever. And then your little project would be outsourced to a tooling fabrication shop. Now, what's the problem with that? As always, when things go through several layers in the supply chain in China, you lose control, you lose transparency, visibility, you know, you lose all that. Who's going to do the drawing, the CAD drawing of the tooling? Probably the tooling fabrication shop. And they will probably not even give it to the plastic part supplier. So do you think you will ever put your hands on it? There's no way. The tooling is going to be made there. You know, what if the, you know, and for whatever reason, the tooling fabrication shop, you know, for them, it's like a one-off job. But if you think, oh, this is kind of cool, you know, I'm going to make another, you know, the tooling a second time, and I'm going to see if I can sell that. Well, you know, are you going to be able to trace that? You know, good luck with that. You've worked in toys quite a bit, so you I'm sure you have a lot of horror stories about, you know, a lot of toys from what I saw from some of my clients start to make in clay and so on, and then they start to make some first parts off of a like development kind of tooling, soft tooling, and so on. A lot of this is subcontracted. And then, oh, we see that there are copies, you know, cheap, crappy copies on our market before we even put our products on the market. Have you had these kind of stories?
Yeah, for sure. Never actually had my product fraudulently manufactured through the toolmaker, but that's because, as I say, I've always reverted to having a relationship either indirectly through
right.
manufacturing partner that I'm using, that I'm going to use to make the product, the mass produce the product, or directly. And I've had the privilege, which is not available to everybody, of visiting also the factory. And you're right, it's really good to get a handle from a designer's perspective. It's very good to get a handle of the supply chain of the tooling production. And many factories will have directly in their factory some tool making capacity where they can modify and tweak and change, but we'll still outsource the main, but at least some of the process of tool fabrication. So that's another sort of thing that I've used in the past, is visiting the factories and seeing firsthand. And an old toolmaker once told me, and it's been a really useful bit of information, said one of the best ways to gauge very quickly the quality of your toolmaker is to visit them and have a look at the floor of the tool shop. And he said, the cleanest, the people that keep the tool room clean and well managed, you've got a good chance. If you walk into a tool shop and there's swarths, you know, there's these bits of sharp metal on the floor, and it's dirty, and it's just,
right.
then just turn around and walk out, because they're not going to make you the quality tool that you're going to need.
Well,
I think that was a really nice thing.
This is. I mean, you could also say that of an electronics assembly factory and so on.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, for the tooling guys, yeah, also make sure they don't drop any tools on the floor and leave any marks. I mean, that would also be a sign. I thought that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, and also actually on that point actually, the way that they're stored, the ways that the tools are stored when they're not being used, that's really interesting as well. They're kind of indirect ways of gauging. Often your tool will be curated by the person showing you. They want to show you the best bit, right? Well, there's a set, there's a few things that you can just look around and engage quite quickly if you are lucky enough to be able to visit the tool shop. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yes. I mean, you another common mistake is you have a tool and then you actually need that tool for, let's say, 5 years because you don't make very large quantities. And, you know, the tool gets rusted and it's really poorly, it's not maintained, which is what we see very often. Whenever they put it out of the presses, they put it back on somewhere, sometimes just on the floor somewhere. And then they put it back on the press. Is, you know, over time, this has an impact on the finishing of your parts. There's no way.
Yeah. You just reminded me actually of another point, which I wanted to make and I forgot, sorry. The point was, at the point of ordering the tool, one of the, as a designer, one of the things that you want to understand, and is again often forgotten, is what the guarantee for the tool is, because that has very significant implications. The volume of the tool can be the serviceable life of the tool.
Yes.
Because it, you know, making 10,000 and making 2 million require different tools from different materials. Again, this was totally, I learned this a long time ago. Very roughly speaking, when you're making a tool in China, 70% of the cost of the tool is in the raw steel and 30% is in the labor. So, you know, the material that you're using to make your tool and the processes that you use to harden and anneal the tool really do have a direct impact on cost. So if you get a very cheap costing tool, you need to make sure that tool is going to be guaranteed to run for the period of time or for the volume that your projected volumes will require. And also, you know, in the event of something, a pin breaking or, you know, a damage caused by the tool not fitting perfectly and then that wearing over time again, you need to understand who picks up the cost for that.
These are great points because, again, when the tool fabrication is made in a shop somewhere and then they in a workshop somewhere and then the injection molding is going to be made somewhere else, and by the way that somewhere else more and more is, you know, Vietnam or some other country, there's going to be finger pointing, you know, who
for sure. Yeah,
I mean the guys making the plastic parts will say, well, yeah, it's the tooling issue, that's why you have this problem, but this is your tool, guys. Can do anything about that. And then you send it back to the tool maker and they're going to say, well, you know, they didn't do the right setting. You know, of course, if you make the cycle is too long or the temperature is too hot, of course, you're going to have this. And actually, this is a little bit of a burn mark. Look at it this the other way and that, right? And look, I'm going to make some trials. I'm going to show you, look, it's perfect. So if you want me to make changes, you're going to have to pay. And then it's not cheap. It's not cheap. It can be quite expensive.
I mean, you've just gone full circle. So if looking at this process from a designer's perspective, this comes back to the idea of building relationships. So the idea that you would go to a toolmaker to get a tool and then go to a factory to, if you can join those up at the beginning. So this is my factory that I'm going to use, and I'm going to use their toolmaker. Their toolmaker, you don't have to use, they may have several toolmakers that you want to look at, think about. But having that alignment of your in the chain as a designer, as someone whose interest is getting product out at the end of the line, it really does de-risk in theory and also in practice, I would say, de-risk that experience and minimize the effort, the inevitable effort that it's going to take to unpick faults should they arise or problems should they arise. If you have everybody talking together and they have relationship, each party in the chain has a relationship and an investment in that relationship to maintain that relationship for not only this business but for future business, your life can be made much easier, I would say.
For For sure.
And of course, this is nothing you don't know. You know, the culture in China, the culture within the manufacturing industry is one of introduction and relationship. Yes, exactly. Yes. And it's difficult to step outside of that, which can be good and bad in different situations. But that's my experience.
Yes. I know for sure. Yeah. And I had another point of a common mistake is since, let's say you don't have an enforceable contract, maybe let's say you do have an enforceable contract, but then you don't really notice, you know, the supplier lost their main customer and they run into a lot of debt and whatever. And then at one point, maybe the factory owner runs away, right? I mean, that happens.
Yes.
Are you going to go and grab the tooling when you have 200 employees looking for, you know, something to cover their salaries of the past 3 months? You don't want to get anywhere close to that factory, right? I mean, they might hold you hostage and say, oh, you're a customer, you didn't pay. pay more, right?
Exactly,
and,
yes.
No. And they might sell your tooling for scrap. Who knows? Well, you know, anything is better than nothing, right?
Yeah. So, it's certainly my experience. I have had the experience where tooling has been quote unquote lost.
Oh yes.
That's happened to me before. It is a very difficult, incredibly difficult situation. And again, you know, just caution, I suppose, buyer beware, and you know, aligning yourself with established. Or connecting as a designer, connecting yourself with production partners that you trust and that can build a relationship with is probably I would say in practical terms the best that you can do. I think, I mean, I don't know whether you would agree with that or not. You know, there's plenty of them. There may be, even if there are legal options available to you, you know, you're developing product and that's what you want to be putting your energy and your efforts into. And so it's something to really, you know, just be make yourself aware of and be ignorant of, I think, is probably what we should all be aiming to do, and having foresight just in case.
Yes, no, of course. Agreements are exactly just in case.
Yeah.
And most of the time you try to get things to work out without resorting to that, of course, because again, it's a big middle finger to the factory. Whenever you start to engage a lawyer, it's kind of the end of the relationship.
Absolutely. So, there's no carrot for them to carry on. So you're just going to go, it's going to spiral from that point. There's no way back, as you've said already.
Yes.
You know, you burn that bridge, and if you're not, you know, you could, in theory, I guess, become more difficult. It might be a more difficult conversation when you then go to the next factory, because they're going to go, well, what's happened? You know, tell me the story. What's your story? Oh, this happened. They go, whoa. Well, you know, they're going to be cautious because they don't want that to happen themselves. They don't know. So you might be putting it for things down the line.
Yeah, sometimes things are not black or white.
Sure.
Some customers, let's say, they have many more supplier problems, you know, than other customers.
Definitely. For sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a great great overview. Thanks a lot, Andy.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
So again, we covered the most common pitfalls when developing tooling, approving tooling, maintaining tooling, and that's a big part of the investment for a lot of new products. So that's something to take very seriously, I would say. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andy, again. Have a great day. And to our listeners, let's catch up next week then, as usual. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.